Enough of that. And I am nervous tonight, and usually I'm not. So this is probably, I don't know why. Okay. My name is Sally. I am a believer living and loved by Jesus, and I've been in recovery for codependency, sexual abuse, food addiction, anger, control, workaholism, grief, and fantasy. When Wendell asked me to share tonight, it kind of changed. We went back and forth, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And then he said, just share your heart. And so then we had this thing in the gathering, for those of you that come on anger, and then we had one on grief. And I thought, well, I'd like to just talk about that. I don't want to do my testimony again, you know. And then I thought, well, my testimony includes all of that. So that's what I've decided to do. I've never shared it here in Pathway, so this will be my first time, and I know you all are my friends. So, hi. let me see, I've already given part of it. Oh, I put it into three chapters because that's the way I see my life. I'm getting older. My first chapter is really my childhood, my teenage years, and then my first marriage. And in that first chapter is a lot of hurt, pain, anger, grief, loss, hell, pain. And the second chapter is my marriage to Larry and working in the recovery field, working with addictions. And I was a program manager of a treatment center at one time and a marriage family therapist. We did couples workshops. So that's my second chapter. It's not all healthy stuff, but that's my second chapter. The third one is now, and to the freedom in recovery and how I feel free today in my recovery. Growing older, I'm facing a lot of different things that we haven't faced before, so it's kind of enjoying life as it is. So chapter one, again, I'm still Sally, and I'm still living loved by Jesus, and I will always, always continue to be in recovery. From the sexual abuse, the eating disorder, the work addiction, the control, codependency. Progress, not perfection. We say that all the time in recovery, and that's, I guess I'll always be in the progress range. I was born in Owensboro, Kentucky, into a family that loved me very much. I was brought up a Southern Baptist, going to Sunday school and church, training union, going every week. I was given the gift of knowing God loved me, though, at a very early age. I joined the church, and I was baptized at age 9, and I felt God's love calling me very strongly. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, and my dad was a civil engineer for the State Highway Department, and his office was here in Bowling Green, so he would drive back and forth from Lawrenceboro to Bowling Green every day. Well, as I said earlier, I became aware of God's love at a very early age. However, I was taught, and we talked about this today too in the gathering, I was taught that I had to perform in order to receive God's love and my mom's love. And I needed to do, earn. I needed to look good all the time, act good, and just be almost perfect. And of course, I couldn't do that. So one day at a revival, I said I'd walk down the aisle and give myself to full-time Christian service. That would do it. That way I could earn God's love. This is the beginning of when all of my guilt began, because years later, I felt I hadn't done what I had promised. Shame and guilt became a big part of my life. But even before that age, I was sexually abused and molested by my dad's older brother, an uncle, who was an upstanding, supposedly, leader in the community. He was actually a deacon in the church and well thought of in the community. He was owner of a funeral home. And all this took place in the funeral home, which makes it even worse, I think. This started with me at about age 3, and it continued until I was about 11. I was always told to be nice to my Uncle Sid because, remember, he was a looking good person in the community, and he had lots of money and wealth and power in the community. And at 3 years old, you know, that's what I heard. So, turn it over. He, as I said, he was a funeral home director, and he had lots and lots of money. So we visited him all the time, probably at least once a month, maybe every other week there for, to begin with, till I got to the point where I didn't want to go anymore. We visited him a lot growing up, and he would take me into the bedroom in the funeral home and sit me on his lap and touch me below and fondle me and give me kisses and money. My mom and dad thought he was just giving me candy or money, and he always did give me money. I never told my mom or dad. I told my mom later. I never told my dad, and my dad died never knowing. I expect now that there was abuse in my dad's family of origin, because his mom died when he was a baby, and this uncle was the oldest brother along with three sisters. Dad would have killed him if he knew, because I was my dad's little princess. That's what he called me. And I always felt I could do no wrong for my dad. But my mom was another story. With mom, I had to be perfect. Never get dirty. Dress appropriately at all times. Looking good family. My mom lived her life through me. Now I know she must have been very insecure and feel very inadequate. She would change my clothes, like when we'd go to the funeral home. If I got a spot on me, if we were out eating, and then she would take me back and put me into something else. So I was never allowed to be dirty. In fact, I can remember one time I was working out, I was playing in the sand pile, and I was trying to climb my neighbor's fence, and I cut my leg. And rather than go in and let mother know that I had cut my leg and it was bleeding, I went and hid in a bush and took leaves to clean off my leg. I still have a wound from that today because it was too late to go to the doctor when I came in. I didn't want her to see that I was dirty and bleeding. Now I know that her father was an alcoholic when she was young, and they went through the Depression, and her mother did all the same enabling stuff when mom was little that I did in my first marriage that you're going to hear about. My mom never admitted that her dad was an alcoholic, though, to the day she died. When I was in junior high, y'all, this can be long, but I got to do this for me. when I was in junior high, I was sexually abused by the principal of my junior high, who had been my next-door neighbor until I was six. I played with his son for 6 years, and we were best friends. And I don't recall any abuse when we lived next door, but I could have repressed some of that. The principal's reason that he gave for touching me inappropriately was to show me, he called me in the office, to show me what not to let other little boys do to me. This happened at school in his office. I did tell my mom about this, and the next thing I knew, he had left town. I know I still don't know what happened to the man. Junior high was a difficult time for me. The girls were mean, and because I was popular with the boys. I got a lot of gifts from boys, and I don't know, I guess they were jealous or something, but they were mean to me. In senior high, I was Miss Goody Two-Shoes. I dated a lot, but mostly dated off and on the guy that I married at age 21. We were married for 22 years. He looked good. You can see the pattern here. He looked good in the community. He was handsome and he was popular, and his parents had money and prestige and power in the community. That started a life of fantasy, because I really thought when I married him that maybe my life would go that same direction. A year after we married, we had our first child, Kimberly, and moved to Bowling Green, where his mother had already moved. We lived in an apartment on State Street, and it's just a block away from where I live today. So every time I walk down that street, I ever have these memories. By the way, I went to college and graduated pretty quickly in 3 years because I wanted to hurry up and get out of the house and get married and quit school and start my own life. I went to UK the first year and then Western the rest because that's where he was. Now back to my move to Bowling Green. My husband started a business in Bowling Green, and he started drinking a lot. He didn't come home until real late at night, under the guise of business. I spent all my time alone with my daughter. I knew no one in Bowling Green for a year or so. So I was home by myself with my baby girl, and she was a baby. I cried a lot, and I thought I'd done something wrong for him to be gone all the time. After that, we moved about 20 times in 10 years. And by then, I'd had two more children. I guess I thought if I continued to have children, things would change. I was still feeling so angry, alone, and abandoned. His drinking continued. He kept saying being out at night was just because of work and business. However, my fantasy world continued because after a while, his business was really producing well. And we had a big house and beautiful furniture and nice cars, lots of clothes. We were members of two country clubs for business purposes. His alcoholism progressed. He went to treatment twice, made a job change after one of the treatments, and we moved away to Mobile, Alabama for a year. That was going to be a geographical change, but nothing changed. So I became more and more distant from God. I really believed at this point that God couldn't love me because my life was so full of pain and anger. I had so much to accomplish every day, problems to solve, finances to control, a husband out of control, children to take care of, and I didn't even think to ask for God's help. All the while, I was hiding my pain from my family and my friends. Nobody knew. Still denying what was going on and trying to be a friend to everybody else when I wasn't even being a friend to myself. I first tried to fill the hole in my soul with food and then not eating. I became very, very sick. I lost a lot of weight. At that time, I was eating only apples because I couldn't make time to really eat. I became diagnosed with hyperthyroidism. I was weighing way below what I should for my age and height. But I finally got on some medicine and got that under control and got better. I totally dedicated myself at this time to my children, trying to make up the void in their lives. At one time, I tried to cover up my pain with drinking, too. But, you know, they say if you can't beat them, join them. Well, I tried that. It didn't work for me. I had very little tolerance, one or two drinks, and I would get sleepy. So, and then in Alabama, we moved back to Bowling Green. I still had no recovery, okay? No recovery at all. In 1975, y'all can tell how old I am by these dates, but I decided to go to work and help with the family's progressive family problems. I put myself into my work, and I became a workaholic. That was also to medicate and hide my pain. This is when I first met Larry. I saw an ad in the newspaper for an alcohol drug educator for schools in Franklin, Kentucky. Larry was the clinical director of the program, and I convinced him that I knew a lot about alcohol and drugs because I'd lived with it. And so he hired me. Now, also, I had been an elementary teacher before that, so I did know how to teach, too. In 1976, and soon after I started the job, my father, who I adored and who loved me unconditionally, died of lung and brain cancer 4 months after he was diagnosed. This is right after I started working. I adored my father, and I had a difficult time with his death. He was in the Owensboro Hospital, and several times my mom had called and told me to hurry up and get there, and I'd get there, and he'd be okay. This time, I didn't hurry, and he died before I got there. And when I got there, my mom wasn't there either, but the nurses and my mom's sister wouldn't let me into his room. I will always be sorry that I didn't arrive sooner. Remember, I was his little princess, and he loved me unconditionally, and I still miss him so much today. Soon after his death, I continued to work, and I soon started working with alcoholics and drug addicts. Well, I could fix them, you know. I thought I could fix anything. I couldn't fix my husband's, but, you know, I could fix everybody else. I was unable to control or manage much of anything in my life, though, at this time. I continued to be good at my work, and I could hide behind my work, but I still had this woundedness in my soul that I had never gotten any recovery for. You could say I was using work to hide from my pain. From here on until about 1981, time just continued to exist for me. I was just hiding my feelings, and I was just surviving. My husband was still drinking more and more. I was working, trying to still be a mother to my children. Some period during this time frame, this is hard right here, my husband thought we needed to get away. His cousin Jack, another wealthy, powerful real estate guy in California, invited us to visit him in California. He was divorced at the time, and he said we could travel to Las Vegas and then Arizona because he had a lake house, and it would do us really good to get away. He had a girlfriend that he would take along with my husband and I. And on that trip, his cousin raped me. He had given all of us, I guess, a date rape or something and put it in our drink. And I'd had a drink, so I blamed myself for so long. Still have problems with that, but there's more. But Dick was so drunk that he ended up with the girlfriend. And the next morning, I woke up with Jack, not remembering a thing. He joked about it the next day in front of me and everyone, and just acted as if nothing had occurred. I felt worthless. He took advantage of a sleeping woman, and that in itself to me today is a crime. Scared, anger, let me see you. Okay. Oh, now I felt worthless. I was scared, angry, hurt, and I was so shamed. I felt now God could possibly not love me. I was defected. I couldn't share with anyone. I felt responsible for what happened. I shouldn't have taken that drink. Dick was drinking the whole night, and I kept that secret about that rape for years. I was so angry that my husband didn't protect me. My anger grew and grew and grew, and I cried and screamed a lot. And several years later, that same cousin, this will sound crazy, raped me again, with the help of his new wife. She was part of it. Why was I even there in that house? Well, during financial difficulties, this same guy who raped me had sent us money to help with our finances when we were having all kinds of trouble. Remember, wealthy guy. And he said that he was a new Christian. And he had apologized. And he said that he had married a Christian lady. And I thought she was a wonderful Christian lady, and that he had become a Christian too. I was one sick lady. And this is the first time I've ever revealed that part of my life. I've held it for years because of my own shame. I told Larry as I was writing this story, but there's still so much shame. I repressed this until lately, and I guess with all the TV exposure this week, it has made it even more difficult for me to look at some of this. But I'm glad that I've been able to get myself free from it. I continued to work for Larry in the 10-county area, still married, my working all the time, going to my boys' game, swim meets, baseball, Kim's swimming, dancing, just surviving still enabling, most painful time of my life. I will say that it was pure hell. I felt like it was hell on earth. In 1981, the beginning of my recovery began. I went back to college while still working, and I got my master's degree in marriage and family therapy. Became a therapist doing lots of counseling. I went to a school to get a degree to become an addictionologist so I could work with families and addicts more effectively. After working several years at Life Skills, I was offered a job as a program manager as an inpatient treatment in an inpatient treatment program here in Bowling Green, located in the old hospital across from where Life Skills was at the time. When I started work at the inpatient treatment program, I guess that's when I became even more controlling. I now had a staff of people that I was to give direction and encourage me to, but I had very little left to give. I was tired of covering up my pain and tired of all the demands. I thought I had to control and fix everything and everybody. That's my codependency. I was feeling God had abandoned me, but I actually ran from Him. He didn't run from me. I was 40 years old now, and I didn't know who I was. About this time, my husband and I quit communicating completely and went financially bankrupt. We lost our home. We had a nice home at the time. We lost our cars. We lost everything. And we even lost my engagement ring he had given me. It had been his mother's. And he had given it to me when we married. And I didn't know, but he had put it down as collateral at the banks for all the loans he'd gotten I didn't know anything about. And they took the ring off of my finger. And I saw it on the president of the bank's wife's hand the next time I saw her. I'll never get over that. At the time, I was searching for myself, and I prayed and turned back to God finally. I received God's grace and grasped the depth of God's love and the depth of His grace. Larry was at that time and had been before that time the executive director of Life Skills. And by now, we had really become good friends when I was working for him. Well, I wasn't working for him then, but he was a good listener, and I would come to work at Life Skills, and my husband and I were still married then, and I was still trying to fix my husband, and he would be there for me if I came in crying and knew I was going to be working the rest of the day. And he was just always the one that listened to me. I was still trying to fix my ex, be there for my children, start taking care and not taking care of myself. My children were terribly affected by my husband's drinking, my unhealthy anger at him, my hurt, and they still are today, which would be another whole story. I still have more guilt and shame on me that I was hiding. I was wearing all the masks I could, looking good to others. Remember, I was taught I was to always look good at all times. While working at the inpatient treatment program, I knew I had to get healthy for myself. My husband continued to drink, and so did one of my sons. My husband wouldn't go to meetings. I needed recovery for me. I went to codependency treatment in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And soon afterwards, I realized what I was doing, and I got a divorce in 1985. And I started practicing what I had preached. I learned to forgive myself and others that hurt me, and I let go of my shame, my guilt, and have been on the journey of recovery ever since. 32 years, and I haven't gotten my token yet, so I will, of working my recovery program. I'm so grateful for where I am today. Everything's not perfect, but progress, not perfection. Perfection will come when I get to heaven. I'm not through with my story. after 4 or 5 years of working at the treatment program, I left and I went out into private practice. And I made more money doing that at private practice than I did for any agency. So that was a good thing at that time because I'd left with nothing. 5 years after I started working in private practice, on May 16th, 1992, I married my soulmate, my best friend, Larry. We love sharing God's love and grace with others. We now have the ability to empathize with others and are not disheartened by our difficulties. We work together during marriage counseling, many couple retreats together after a marriage. We moved into an old lovely home on State Street and had an office for private practice, same home we have today. We served in the Mayes community. We provided group, family, individual therapy. We first started going to a Methodist church, and then we went to a First Christian church, and you won't believe it, but there was sexual abuse involved there too. So we actually started transferred to Broadway. We wanted to become more active and wanted first to do a counseling program here. But after learning about CR, we decided this was a healing ministry that would help anybody and everyone. We felt so blessed that we had support for the program. CR blessed us in so many ways. We are so blessed today to have so many friends living in God's love through our share groups, our step study groups, our mass group, and still today here in Pathway. But the heartaches didn't stop with my marriage to Larry. Larry's father, and this was a real painful time for me, Larry's father disowned him, as you all know, when he married me, because I was a divorced woman who'd been married, and he went to the Church of Christ, and that was not accepted. In fact, his father died with Larry being disowned by him, and also the church disowning us. I didn't even meet his mother. His mother or father did not attend our marriage. I did not meet his mother until his father died. That's another story that I have to tell because I hold on to it. The funeral was terrible for me. His mother called and said, "You can bring your wife." Now that he was dead, you know, I guess it was okay for her to meet me. And I went, and there was a group back in the back kind of praying in a circle because they knew how I felt about going. These people didn't like me. But I made it through that, through them being there and supporting us. But then the graveside, you know, where the casket's in front of you, and then the elders of the Church of Christ were back there. And when they came to shake hands with everybody, Larry's ex-wife was on one side of me and Larry was on the other. I don't even know if you remember that. But they shook everybody's hand and they shook her hand, went around me and walked on to shake them. So they didn't even shake my hand or acknowledge me. I felt shamed, anger, hurt. Shortly after that, my son started drinking again, and he came to live with us for a while. He had been to treatment once when he was 19. His drinking became a problem from him, and a lot of it was from growing up in that horrible childhood. I think he probably had the same thing. But it wasn't long before we had to either give him some options. He was either going to have to leave, he was living in an apartment upstairs, or go to treatment for the second time. And he did. And when he got out of treatment, he moved into his own apartment. He wasn't allowed to come back to our home. Tough love. Then Larry's daughter, right after that, recently divorced, moved in with us. And I mean right after that. And she started using. And she, too, gave her options, and she went to treatment. This is really kind of funny because my son just got out of treatment, and she went into the same treatment program. So we spent our whole summer that year going to the family alcohol and drug program. And remember, both of us had worked in it, and I had actually even been a leader and done the family program before. But boy, did it feel different being a member of the family and going through that. Larry and I really helped each other through all of this. We couldn't have done it by ourselves if he hadn't supported me and I hadn't supported him. Through all of these painful experiences, Larry and I have become closer again, closer and closer to God. We've learned to love, support each other. We have learned to love and support others. And we try not to enable any of our family members. My granddaughter has also been like a daughter to me. My son divorced, and that's caused a lot of hurt in my family today, especially, I think, with my daughter. There's a lot of tension in my family today because, really, they're all adult children of an alcoholic untreated for their own issues. My one son did get some treatment, and he's probably got more recovery than any of them. I'm about through. Next, and I'm not going to expand on this too much, our mothers. A lot of you were here as we were in CR, and my mother came every week with me. And she lived with us for 12 years, and I was her major caretaker until she died at 99 and a half. And we took care of Larry's mother, this is in our marriage, and my mother, and we took them everywhere. We took them to eat. We took them everywhere we go. Now, Larry's mother wouldn't come here because this wasn't a Church of Christ. So it wasn't okay to come here. I guess that was the reason, you think. But remember how I could never be enough for my mom? I never felt that I did enough for her. Or I never did it the way she wanted. Now, this may bring some tears. It hurts so much. This part of my life still brings tears when I talk about it. 12 years of caretaking her, and you'd think I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything right. And I was told that I didn't love her over and over again. Actually, because of her unresolved past and insecurity and woundedness, she didn't love herself. So she couldn't love me exactly the way I am, which affected the way I treated her. I tried to show her love, but during these 12 years, even with the recovery that I had, I didn't do very well. I was very stressed and very hurt and very angry. And sometimes my hurt comes out as anger. Underneath anger is always hurt for me. My elevator heard every word there is from the third floor all the way down, because that's where our elevator came, to the back room where Larry would be sitting waiting for me. And poor thing, my saint husband, my adult children call you, has supported me and accepted in me in all of my moods, my hurt, my screaming, my crying, my anger, healthy and unhealthy. So have my friends in recovery. Many of you here. I don't know what to do without you. My step study friends, my share group, my CR family, my pathway family. To all, I am so grateful. Today, I'm grateful for all my lessons in life. I love unconditionally. For me, in order to survive a difficult, abusive childhood and adolescence, my wounded child inside of me had gone into hiding. The pain and confusion was so great. That woundedness never dies for me. It's still, I don't think it does for any of us completely. But if we have been hurt, abandoned, shamed, neglected, and abused, that little wounded part of me, that pain, that grief and anger live on within us as adults. And we carry it into all of our relationships, friends, spouses, and children. And when we come out of hiding and allow God to work in us and through us by admitting our pain and woundedness, which is what I'm trying to do, our wounds from the past can be healed. And I am so grateful for that. Therefore, loving myself, I can truly love others today. I can reach out to others, respond to people. I listen to those people whom Jesus listens. I can listen and love the lonely, the addicts, the mentally ill, the alcoholics, the homeless, the LGBTQ, the sick and the poor. My goal is to reach out to others and grow in God's love towards all. I want to share God's love because God is counting on me and He's counting on you to continue the development of His kingdom that began with Jesus, and to share that love. I'm going to chapter 3, and then I'll be through. I'm 72 years old, raped 3 times, and sexual abuse from all of that. But today, I am free. I realize all my difficulties and hurts occurred for a purpose. All the experiences I thought were stumbling blocks became stepping stones in my recovery. They deepened my sympathy and heart to be of service to others. My goal is to continue to respond to God's love and grace with enthusiasm. I always want to continue to grow, loving myself and others exactly where they are and exactly where I am. Today, I'm at peace most of the time. I love people a lot, and I laugh a lot, and I try to live life as it was my last day, most of the time. In order for me to love myself, I had to forgive myself for my past and experiences and know how much God loves me. I've had to feel pain and use healthy anger and grieve in order to heal from the past. All of us can only live one day at a time, one moment at a time, fully in the present, without obsessing about the past or the future. I've healed and become free by feeling my feelings, sharing them with God and safe people like you, forgiving others, and giving all my defects to God. That's how I've learned to love myself and love others. Loving God, love myself, and loving others. This is the heart of what I think of Jesus and who we are, is to love. The only meaning in anything in my past is that it got me here today. We must feel pain to heal. Then give it to Jesus, who can change our minds about it, because we're powerless. When I accepted God's love, I became real, authentic, and loving. The truth will set you free. I believe what the scripture means is not that the scripture is going to set you free, but it means being true to yourself and honest and accepting your own woundedness, sharing it with safe people, and becoming free. That's the only way I know you can become free. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I did and continue to do this. I'm now in a new group, senior group now, and I'm a senior, and I love that group because we're all close and safe for each other, and we can say whatever we think in there too. Believe me, if I could go back and change the past, I would do many things differently. I would choose to spare my three adult children and Larry's adult child the pain and the hurt and harm that my codependency, anger, and enabling caused. But I can't change even one thing that happened in my past, and neither can you. I can't live somewhere in the future worrying if this or that's going to happen, and neither can you. We have to give it to God. I can live in today, and I can, with Jesus' guidance and direction and love, make a difference in the way I live my life today. We can all seize the everyday opportunities of divine moments today. For that and my life story, I am so grateful. Because today I can be silly, and you all know, those of you that know me know, I can really be silly. And I can have fun, and I can laugh at myself, and I can laugh with others. I am more relaxed. Larry and I take more trips, fewer imaginary troubles, eat chocolate, accept others where they are, accept my powerlessness with my adult children, and forgive myself for what I did there. We go to the ocean more, the mountains more, and I feel serene being in these wonders of God's creation. We have a beautiful world as our scenery. I believe that we're all perfect children of God when we enter this world. This is what I believe. And when I remember this core of my identity, I can love myself and others. So thank you so much for listening to my story. I feel really grateful, and I am free. And I am free. And I have a handout over here that I wasn't going to go any longer. I really wanted to read it, but I thought it had been long enough, about how to live a life that matters. So if you want to pick one of those up, if there's not enough, then I'll make you a copy or we'll make more or something. But anyway, thank you for listening.